have a warm cup of coffee in front of me right now. Maybe you do too. This hour, we will find out how feeling the warmth from a hot cup of coffee or tea and other sensations, including texture, weight, taste, smell, color, affect how we think and how we behave. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest psychologist has researched what is called physical intelligence, and we will learn more about what this is and how it affects us every day. And we'll welcome your questions and your own observations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Thelma Loebel, a psychologist, a professor in the School of Psychological Science, and the director of the Child Development Center at Tel Aviv University, author of Sensation, the New Science of Physical Intelligence. Good morning.
Good morning.
What exactly is physical intelligence?
Well, to explain that, I will use the term embodied cognition, which is the term which is used usually in articles and in theories. What it means is that our bodies and our mind actually work together. Although this was an old notion, you know, people thought about it, philosopher, a long time ago, only in the last years, the studies that I bring in my book are in the last 6 or 7 years, there are many experiments that show that we activate our emotions, behaviors, by just touching or having any physical sensations. That is, if I say it simply, our physical sensations, the things we see, the things we touch, the colors, the textures, they all influence our emotions, our behaviors, our judgments, our decisions, our thoughts, without our awareness. That's very important to note.
Oh, well, how did you get the idea to write this book?
I'm a professor for over 30 years doing research and actually published mainly in academic journals, many of them top journals, but they are all meant not to the general audience, but just to researchers and students. And for years, I really wanted to write something for the general audience. And I did research mainly on gender differences, on child development, other stuff. And then about 5 years ago, I started reading and doing research on this area of embodied cognition. And I was so fascinated, seriously, like I was not fascinated by any other study that I've done and that I've read. And then I say to myself, this is the time I'm writing this for the general audience, because this is something I think and I really believe that it will interest everybody and has an effect on our life in every aspect of our life, both personal and business. So I decided I'm sitting and writing this book.
You got the idea, though, while lifting weights?
Yeah. For example, that's when the idea came, that the idea was before, but the decision, this is the time to do it, was while I was lifting weights, because there are studies that showed that we, metaphorically, we associate weight with importance, right? We say this is a heavy decision, and stuff like that, which actually associate heavy with heavy stuff with importance. So in a minute, if you want, I can describe.
No, I do want to talk a little bit more about that, because when you said that, I also thought about, you know, throwing my weight around. I don't want to throw my weight around.
Exactly. Yeah. So and many other metaphors. I felt that that something went out of my shoulders. You know, like really, people associate this heavy weight with importance. It's not a light decision, etc. So let me, if that's okay, I can describe a study that did that, and
sure,
then we can associate with that. So in one, there are actually several studies. In one study, the researchers gave two groups of participants a job candidate a vita, resume, and they told them to read it and to tell them their opinion about that candidate. Now, both groups got the same exact resume, only with one difference. The resumes were handed to them on a clipboard, and they were handing it in their hands while standing so they could feel the weight. One group had the resume on a heavier clipboard than the other group. So one group was the heavy clipboard group, the other group was the light clipboard group. Those who read the resume on a heavy clipboard thought that this candidate was more fit for the job. He was a better candidate. And remember, that both groups read the same exact resume.
So the just feeling that weight gave the employer the thought that was a weightier candidate.
Exactly. And people don't believe that. I mean, they would never thought that's the thing, that it's without our awareness. When they were asked, of course, no one thought that it had anything to do with the weight of the clipboard. In another study on the same issue, passersby were asked to rate how much they think several issues should be funded, like education, air pollution, etc. And men who were given, you know, the questionnaire on a heavier clipboard, again, thought that they should be funded. They thought that more than those who were handed the same questionnaire on a lighter clipboard. So if you want your resume to be read and people think that you're more fit for the job, or if you hand some document and you want people to take it more seriously, of course, the content is important. Don't misunderstand me. But if you put it on a heavier clipboard, or if the papers are thick, it might help a little bit.
Send it in a heavier weight paper, and it possibly could give you a little bit of an edge over somebody who doesn't have that heavy weight paper.
Well, the edge is important. Yeah, exactly.
So what? I mean, do we know why this is happening? I mean, I know the experiment showed it was happening, but why in the world would a employer think, oh, this feels heavier, I like this candidate better?
Yeah, to explain that, which is not that easy, and I will relate that also when we talk later on other studies, if you wish, we have to say a few things. First of all, there are several theories that are not contradicting each other, but some stress more the idea of metaphors, while others stress more what is called embodied cognition. And what is called the scaffolding, which means that when we are little children, we learn first the concrete concepts. We learn what is heavy and what is light. We learn what is far and what is near. We learn what is warm and what is cold. But the concrete object is concept. Later on, when we grow up, we learn the abstract concepts, like a heavy decision is an abstract concept. A warm personality, that's an abstract concept. Or a smooth sailing, etc. That, if you wish, I'll talk later. So what happens is that the theorists think that we build our abstract concepts on the basis of the concrete concepts, like you build a building layer by layer by layer, in a scaffolding, what they call. So when we touch something warm, or when we feel something heavy, it activates the more abstract concept, which is related to that. Mm. So in this case, it's the importance. In other cases, it's a warm personality, if you touch something warm, for example.
Yeah, so if I'm holding my warm cup of coffee right now, I'm maybe we're not face-to-face, so it's a little bit different, but according to the research, holding this warm cup of coffee is going to, I'm going to warm up to you more. I'll have I'll think more of you if I'm holding a warm cup of coffee or tea in my hand.
Yes, and actually you don't have to be face to face with me. I mean, just hearing me might do the job. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, in that study that you're referring to, which actually was one of the first studies by William and Barge from Yale University, and was published in Science, which is a top, really top journal. In this study, subjects were asked to come to the laboratory, and in the elevator, where they were accompanied by the experimenter. The experimenter just asked them to hold her cup of coffee for a few seconds while she was writing their name, and then took the coffee back. Then they came to the lab, and they were asked to judge a person on various characteristics. Now, half of the participants were holding in the elevator a cold cup of coffee, while the other half were holding a warm cup of coffee. Those who held a warm cup of coffee judge that person as a warmer person. So that's where you will judge me as a warmer person while holding coffee. But also, I want you to behave in a warmer way, to be kinder. And the other study showed that. In the other study, they gave two groups of participants to hold what they called the therapeutic pad, as if they were participating in a marketing study. They told them, you know, hold this therapeutic pad and ask them several questions about that product. Half of the participants, again, held a warm therapeutic pad, and the other half a cold therapeutic pad. Then they were thanked for their participation, and they were offered a gift as a reward for taking part in this study. They could choose between a present for themselves or a present for a friend. More people who held a warm therapeutic pad chose a present for a friend. They were warmer. They were nicer. So that shows that when you hold your warm cup of coffee, which I hope you do, you will be warmer to me, and you will judge me also as a warmer person, which helps a lot in many interactions.
Yeah, that means that we, maybe for a first date, we shouldn't go to the bar and hold an ice-cold cocktail.
Definitely.
Because we're going to actually think that that person's colder if we do that?
Yeah. We might think that person is colder, and we might also behave in a colder way. So in both ways. So that's one of the tips for first days. There are others in the book.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk about more of them, and we'll welcome our own listeners' observations. Have you noticed this? I guess this is supposed to be that you're not aware of it, but have you heard about this science of physical intelligence? How different physical sensory experiences can affect the way we think, the way we act, our emotions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Thelma Loebel, a psychologist and author of Sensation, The New Science of Physical Intelligence. And we're talking about how the things we see and touch and smell affect the way we think. And we're welcoming your questions about physical intelligence, any observations you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So let's talk a little bit about color, because I am color. I think colors do affect our moods, certainly, but I was surprised to hear that the colors that I wear also affect other people. I mean, if I wear red on a date, for instance, Professor Loebel.
Yeah, definitely. Red is the color. Well, red actually has several influences on us, which are definitely not the same. Red is associated both with passion and love on the one hand, and I'll talk about it in a minute, and it's also associated with danger, stop signs, etc. So if you want, I can start with the dating issue, and then I can go to the other associations of red.
Yes.
So in one study, several groups of men were shown the same photo of a woman, only the color of the background was different. One group was shown that photo depicted against a red background. The other group was shown the same photo, only depicted against a green background, and the third one against a dark background, like a or a gray, because they did several studies and they varied the colors, but only always one group was shown the same woman against a red background. And then they were asked questions about that woman, how attractive she is, how sexy she is, whether they would love to have sex with her, whether they would like to date her, and in one experiment, even how much money they would like to spend on her. In all these studies, and they did several of them, comparing different photos of women, those who saw the woman against a red background thought she was more attractive, more sexy. They wanted to have sex with her more than the other men in the other groups, and say they would spend more money on her. And remember, all the three groups saw the same photo. Now, more importantly, when they were asked what made them think that she's attractive, they thought all kinds of things, but not the color of the red of the background. They didn't think that the red influenced them, but it did. Mm-hmm. And even they thought that she was more attractive, not only more sexy, but more attractive. And it was the same exact photo. So
what do we think is going on psychologically there? Why in the world would red make these guys think that this woman's more attractive?
It could be both evolutionary, that also in the animal world, a red, you know, is associated with also passion. And it could also be something that we learn through the years. Because if you think about all the things that we see in movies,
the red rose, I suppose,
the red rose, the lady in red. If a lot of time, you know, film directors know that, and when they want to show that a woman is sexy,
oh, and red lipstick too.
Exactly, they will put red lipstick or red shoes. At least that. Sometimes they put, you know, they put the red dress, and everything is in red. And when they want to show the woman is more pure, they will put her in white. And then when they want to show that she is not very interesting, they will probably put gray. But red is always associated with passion. And then, you know, kids from their, when they are small, they see this red in association with sex. And then they don't realize that just seeing something red will affect their perception. And they will really believe that this woman is more attractive.
You know, on the other hand, you often hear of the red power tie that men are encouraged to wear. What about that?
Yeah, that's also, you know, in the animal world, again, if I go back there, red is definitely associated with dominance. And you see in many animals that the alpha male is something red. And also with the size, which I could talk later, but with the color red. And so we associate many times red also with dominance. And since there are many studies that show that dominant men with higher status are perceived as sexier, studies have shown that also what I told now about how men perceive women was found also how women perceived men. When they saw the same picture of a man against a red background, they also saw, the women thought he was sexier and more attractive. And the researchers, they wanted to find out if indeed the reason here is the fact that he's dominant. And they showed two groups of women the same photo of a man, but one of them wore a red shirt and the other one wore a shirt in another color. And they asked how successful this man is and what are his prospects for being successful in the future. And more women thought that the man with the red shirt was more successful, which shows that they associate somehow in their head the effect that the red with dominance and higher status, which leads to being more sexy in the case of men.
Yeah. There's so many colors that I do want to get to the phones, but right now I'm wearing a black jacket. What associations do we make with the color black?
Well, in your case, when you wear a black jacket, it will probably be associated with the elegance, which we all want because, you know, a nice little black dress is always associated with elegance. But when you see a lot of black around you, it actually is associated with negativity compared to white, which is associated with positive things. So a lot of times, and there are many studies that show that automatically we associate black with negative and white with positive. For example, if you show words on the screen and you tell participants, tell me as fast as you can if this word is positive or negative. If the word is presented in black and it is positive, which it takes them longer to say that it is positive, or if the word is negative and it's presented in white, it also takes them longer compared to if the word is negative as black or positive and white. Mm-hmm. Why? Because if we associate automatically in our heads that black is negative and white is positive, it's like we get two contradictory information. We get the word is really positive, like a nice person or charity or positive words, but they are written in black, so it takes us longer to say, yeah, this is positive because we see the black, which means that automatically in our head we associate black with negativity.
Yeah, and I bet you that comes from the hero, villain, black hat, white
exactly,
hat, cowboy
all these,
thing.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. All these, if they, again, film producers know that very well and use it. So they know that, and by using it, they reinforce our associations with these colors.
We are talking with Thalma Lobel. She is the author of Sensation, The New Science of Physical Intelligence. And we are talking about how what we feel or see or touch, how that influences the way we think and the way we behave. Our first caller for her is Barbara in Eau Claire. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I'm going to share with you an experience about dogs. Several years ago, my white-haired fox terrier died, and I was very attached to him. And shortly after, I went to a pet store, and the woman put a terrier of some sort in my arms, and I instantly felt absolutely nothing. I was upset. I didn't feel anything. I said, I don't want this dog. And I saw another dog walking down the path. And I said, there's a dog I'll never buy. It was urinating along the trail. I mean, it was like a leaky tube. And I said, I don't want to shed her. And I said, but I'll try that dog. And she handed me the dog. And 3 hours later, I said, this is the dog I'm going to buy. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I'm going to tell you, I don't want to put a plug in for Bassets, but I later had the Basset Hound and a Beagle, and my Basset Hound, the dog I bought, definitely was a warmer dog. I never thought anything till I heard your scientist conversation today. That dog was always warmer, and at the time my son was very ill, and I've told my friends, when I put that puppy on my stomach, every pain in my body went away.
Oh, my goodness. And I bet it was, you're talking truly, literally, a warm,
warm
dog.
Warm. He was warm. I would walk him. I'd try to walk him like I used to walk my terrier, and he couldn't do it in the heat. The heat was much too much. I'd have to stop and get water for him. I didn't know any of this when I bought him. When you touched him, he was warm to the touch. And I never equated that until I heard this program today.
Yeah. So she fell in love with her Basset puppy because he was warm, Professor Lobel.
Yeah, it was warm, and I'm sure that the Barbara, yeah, you felt the warmth, the physical warmth of the dog, and it activated the warm feelings that you had, the warm personality that you probably have, and that's exactly what I'm talking in my book and explaining more in details. And I'm really glad that you called and told us this story.
Yeah, I am too. What about, I was thinking where Barbara was going there, and she didn't exactly, but let's talk about it anyway. The feel, the softness, I mean, there's a lot
exactly.
of physical intelligence there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say about the softness, because when you touched your dog, you also felt the softness of you know, the hair and the skin. So there are studies who showed that, again, when we use metaphors like a soft negotiator, a hard day, we actually, these metaphors are more than just figure of speech. And in one study, for example, they asked people to touch either a soft blanket or a very hard block, as if they were participating in some other study. And then they had to listen to an interaction between two people and to judge that interaction, whether that person was softer or harder person. Those who touched the soft blanket just before they listen to the interaction, judge that interaction as a softer, nicer one. And the person who was participating, one of them, the person that they were asked to judge, was perceived as a softer person. In another study, which showed about negotiations and what is related to our interaction with other people, half of the people were sitting on a soft chair and the other half on a hard chair. And then they were asked as if they are to imagine if they are negotiating about buying a car. And those who sat on a softer chair were softer negotiators. They changed their initial offer more often than those who sat on a hard chair, which means that just touching something soft or something hard both influence the way we judge in another interaction and our behavior. So it has a lot of implications for everyday life.
So
touch something softer with your children, like, or touch your dog.
So if we want to negotiate the best deal on that new car, we shouldn't sit in that soft chair. We should stand or sit on the hard desk or something.
Exactly, and let the other person, the seller, sit on a softer chair, or let him hold something soft. Then it will improve our negotiation.
Yeah. Patty emails, my food always tastes better if I eat off a heavier fork. Plastic and featherweight utensils diminish the eating experience for me. Do you think that, is there some science behind that?
Definitely. There are studies that show us actually that the weight of the and the structure of the plates or the fork influence our taste. And this is exactly if weight is related also to importance, to, you know, to that it's a good. So if you eat something from a heavier thing, the dinner also is more important, which means it's better, you know, you put more thought into it, and I'm sure she's right. You are definitely right.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I guess I've also been advised while watching my weight to put food on a smaller plate because then it looks like you're eating more. It looks fuller. You know, the plate looks like it's brimming over the top with food rather than, you know, sparse on a big plate. That would be along the same lines, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It would. Yeah, definitely. Because also, when we eat, you know, we associate all kinds of things. For example, we associate size with all kinds of things. And if it's put on a smaller, on a bigger plate, the relative size of the food changes. And then you think you eat more or less depending on the size of the plate.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Randy in Middleton next. Hello, Randy.
Good morning, folks. With apologies to Professor Lobel, I'd just like to ask the host, Ms. Cardine, really quickly, on your next pledge drive, could I maybe donate a kidney?
You know, Randy, kind of distracting from our conversation right now. What is your question?
Okay, well, first of all, you reminded me, this wasn't my original question, but Professor Lobel, you reminded me when you're talking about weightlifting that in the service and in college and on my first job, I used to be able to carve out an afternoon time to do my weightlifting and running and swimming when I could. And I found that I would try to do as much creative work as I could afterwards. And I would try to make important decisions afterwards because they just became simpler. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book Sense of Where You Are, but there was a book by John McPhee in the 60s where he studied Bill Bradley, the former senator, when he was a superstar at Princeton, a basketball superstar. And it was you learned that there was an amazing amount of intellectual decision-making on the basketball court. So,
and Randy, let me jump in because I want to apologize. Randy was making a joke, and it would have been funny, but I would have to explain it to everybody else listening, and I'm going to do that and take a little bit of a time away from this hour. We talked about whether or not we should compensate people for donating kidneys in our 6 o'clock hour this morning, and we had a guest pro and a guest con, and I appreciate the humor, Randy. Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, what about Randy's observation, Professor Lobel?
He actually observed that after, after lifting weights or you're doing, he made heavier decisions, which goes along exactly with the studies that I mentioned before, that we associate physical weight with importance. That's what he said, I think. He just gave us another example from his own life, how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Randy, did you have anything else?
Well, yes. I just wanted the actual reason I called in was that I've recently heard Louis C.K. do like 15, 20 minutes of comedy about driving and how much it affects us and how we can get behind a wheel and suddenly want complete strangers to be dead. That's an extreme example, but I wonder if you also have studied that.
That's more like a road rage thing. Is there anything in physical intelligence that would explain road rage, Professor Lobel?
Only one thing that I can think of, which is a really very, very interesting study that I wanted to talk about it anyhow. I don't know if it relates directly to your question, but it's the study that shows how logos that we see all the time when we walk, you know, we drive, and we see all kind of logos. So there is one study about fast food logos. So if you want me, I can talk about that.
All right, go ahead.
You know, fast food is always when people think about fast food, they usually think about our health and what it will do to our weight and health. But fast food uses the word fast, and these researchers wanted to find out whether it is related really to our fast behavior. So they did three studies, which are really fascinating, I think, and I describe them in the book. In one study, they exposed subliminally the participants to logos of fast food, like McDonald's, KFC, Burger King, etc. Subliminally means that the observer doesn't consciously see these logos, but because they are exposed to very, very short time. And so one group was exposed to these logos. Another group was exposed to just simple squares. And then they were asked to read a paragraph. Those who were exposed to the fast food logos read the paragraph faster than those who were exposed to just squares. So they showed that they were impatient. They wanted to finish it quickly. I will go in a minute. I'll relate it to driving. In the second study, they were asked to think about time that they visited any fast food restaurant, like it's not a restaurant, establishment such as McDonald's again. And the other group was asked to imagine that they were visiting grocery store. Then they were asked to evaluate several products. Some of them are time-saving, like a toaster with four slices or a conditioner and shampoo in the same bottle compared to one-slice toaster or conditioner separately and shampoo separately. Those who were thinking about visiting a fast food place evaluated as more desirable those things that save time, like the products like a four slices, toaster, etc. Again, showing that they wanted to save time, they were impatient. And the third one showed that they wanted also to save, not to save money, but if they had the opportunity to get their money immediately or to wait a week and get a larger sum, those who were exposed to fast food logos prefer to take the money immediately. Now, how do I relate that to driving? When you sit in the car and you see, without even noticing it, all these logos of the fast food, you may be more impatient. You may be honking more, etc. So that's without being aware about the effects of these logos. So that's, I think, very nice to show how the effect that all these environmental cues affect our behavior and emotions without being aware of that.
We are talking with Thelma Lobel. She is the author of Sensation, The New Science of Physical Intelligence. She is a psychologist and a professor at the School of Psychological Science and the director of the Child Development Center at Tel Aviv University. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest psychologist and author this hour has researched what is called physical intelligence. We're talking about what this is and how it affects us every day, talking about how our feelings, our sensations, including texture and weight and taste and smell and color and many other physical sensations, affect how we think and how we behave. And we're welcoming your questions for her. Any observations you might have, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Mary in La Crosse. Hello, Mary.
Excuse me. Thank you for this topic and for your guest. This is one time, it's another book I'm going to have to buy because I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. But my first, when I called first, it was to talk about the heavy coffee mugs. There's a restaurant in my hometown. It's just a made-right sandwich restaurant, and it's in a horseshoe-shaped counter. And it was actually on TV's program of favorite restaurants in the United States, but they have these heavy, heavy coffee mugs. And I am not the kind of person that sits ordinarily and just, I try and respect people's private place. But when I go to my hometown, I always thought it was just a melancholy because people come there, when you come to my hometown, you go to the Maid Rite and you get acquainted. And ordinarily, but I love that heavy, heavy coffee mug that they have. And I will visit with absolutely anybody. In fact, I bought one, and I love to use it for my breakfast. But then the other thing that I thought of is I fell in love with my husband, I always said, because he always smelled like Old Spice in the days when men wore wool suits. And I loved the texture of his wool suits. And he said he fell in love with me when he saw me the first time when we wore wool sweaters and skirts in college. And I had on this royal blue matching sweater and skirt. And he said that was when he fell in love with me, when he saw me in that.
Oh.
And I love this topic. And thank you to your guest for writing this book.
Well, Mary, thank you for those observations. Talk a little bit, Professor Lobel, especially about she fell in love with her husband. He smelled of Old Spice, and she loved the feel of his wool suits.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, for these observations. I will definitely use them in my memory because they relate directly to many things that I write in my book, and I hope when you read it you will find more observations. I'll be very glad to have them. So, yes, the fact that you remember the texture of your husband's suit and it affected you shows exactly that it was related. No, this physical feeling of the texture of the suit was probably related to softness or to other things that I don't know exactly the texture of the suit, but it was related or whether it was rough or smooth. It is related to all these things which affect our feelings, and then they stay in your memory. The same about the smell. You know, people know for a long time that you have to put certain smells in shops or when you sell your apartment. This is not new. Realtors know that you have to bake cookies or something when you want to sell an apartment because it influences the buyers. But the studies that I bring in my book show not only the customer about, you know, consumers and all that, but it show that they affect also indeed our feelings and our performance. For example, peppermint and cinnamon smells improve both cognitive performance and athletic performance. So this is about smells, how they influence our performance. but they also we associate all kind of metaphors. For example, when you say it smells fishy, right? Mm-hmm. So there are studies that show that when people smell the smell of fish, they really were more suspicious. They really were more suspicious than those who smell other smells, including not very nice smells, but not fishy smells. Only those that smell the fishy smell really were more suspicious in all kind of experiments that the experimenter did, how you trust the other person. They didn't trust the other person. They thought something was going on. So smells affect us in these ways. Also, very not nice smells influence our moral judgment. Studies have found that when we smell something really disgusting, we judge the same moral dilemma harsher. We think this is not good what these people did compared to those who smelled a nicer smell or didn't smell anything at all.
How does that jive with the study I read about that you are more likely to do something maybe that's not so moral after you've taken your own nice shower?
Yeah, that's my study, actually. I'm very glad you asked about that. We did it in our lab in Tel Aviv University. And this is nice because it's counterintuitive. What happened was that I sent several students to the gym of the university, and they approached people either before they took the shower or immediately after they went out of the shower. And we gave them a questionnaire with very, very difficult questions that actually nobody can answer some of them. And then we told them, answer these questions, and then we gave them the answer sheet. And we said, we don't have time to mark them ourselves. Just see whatever you did right or wrong. And give me just your answer, whether you answered 3, 4, or 5 questions right. So they were sure I could never detect if they cheated or not. In fact, I could. And what we found was that those who took a shower cheated more than those who did not take the shower. Now, this could be counterintuitive because you probably will associate purity. When you are clean, physical clean, you're also more pure, and then you will cheat less. But we found and we think that because you feel cleaner, physical cleaner, and many studies associated physical cleaning with morality, then you think, okay, I'm morally right, I'm clean, so I have a little room and I have a license to cheat a little bit. So that's the results that we came out. Very nice. Actually, we just submitted it to publication in one of the journals, American journals.
Let's take another call. Michael in Madison is with us. Hello, Michael.
Hi. I just have a short question. When it's hot, some people refer to it as hot under the collar. I guess that's a different one. But I was just curious that is there more violence among people who get when the temperature goes real high, or
is that part of the physical intelligence? We hear that in hot, sweltering days that perhaps there's more crime and such.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I heard exactly the question, but did you ask if ambient temperature influences us?
In essence, yes. Are we more violent when it's hot out?
Ah, violent. That's the word I didn't hear. There are many studies that showed, yes, that in very hot days we are more violent. And there are, in general, there are, if I want to expand the answer, there are symptoms that are related to climate. People are more depressed in the winter than in the summer. And on the other hand, are more violent when it is very hot. And it's also related to the amount of light. It's related to many things that are related to either temperature or light that influence the way we behave and how violent we are and how depressed we are.
Thank you, Michael. Let's go to Robin in Gays Mills. Hi, Robin.
Hi. This all reminded me of when we first adopted our little girls from Ukraine from an orphanage. They were in that orphanage for 6 years, and when we brought them home, we noticed that our youngest daughter was deathly afraid of dogs and couldn't get to the bottom of it. until one day after about 5 months, I made some borscht, and the smell of the borscht started bringing back all of these early childhood memories, and they remembered when they were abandoned. They were abandoned with two big dogs in the middle of the winter, and Vala was so afraid that we began to realize that it was the dogs that saved their lives and by cuddling up to them and keeping them warm. And once she realized that the dog saved her life, she immediately bent down and picked up our poodle and has loved dogs ever since. And all of that was because I made borscht, and the smell of borscht brought back all these memories and was able to resolve the mystery of why she was so fearful.
Triggers a lot of memories. Professor Lobel?
Yeah, wow, that's a very, very interesting and touching story. And actually, you know, in my book, I refer to orphanage and places that children, where they were very small and were there, like in Romania, they were not touched, actually almost not touched, and how it affected them. But of course, when they were lucky and have parents later on like you, it compensated. So the fact that they were experiencing all these terrible feelings of, for example, not having sensory experiences as they should have been in all these orphanages, that not touched or all kind of things. And then later on, as you say, some smells or touch or the softness of the dog or different things bring these back and activate all these memories and emotions and behaviors. So that's really an incredible story.
Well, you know,
I refer to these type of things in my book, Sensation.
Thank you very much, Robin, for the call. We're almost out of time. We do have a caller, and I'll just present his question for you. He says, can we be taught to be more aware of how these physical sensations affect us?
That's a very, very good question. I'm glad you asked that. Yes, we can be taught to a certain degree. We definitely, when we know all these experiments and we know all these results and findings, we are more aware of our sensory experiences, and then we can be less manipulated by them, and we can also use it for our benefit when we negotiate with people, whether it's a personal negotiation with your children or friends or parents, or whether it's a business negotiation. So we will definitely be still affected by our sensations, but less so. And I can see it from my own experience and from the experience of my students. In the last 5 years, all we talk is about that, and we do research on that. And we all the time say we are more aware of that, and we feel that we are less manipulated, and we really come to the judgment based on the merit of a person and not whether we touch a warm or cold coffee. So, yes, we can definitely, after reading the book, you will see that.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thalma Lobel is a psychologist, a professor in the School of Psychological Science, and the director of the Child Development Center at Tel Aviv University, author of Sensation, the New Science of Physical Intelligence. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you are with us tomorrow at this time. We will have two guests from different political perspectives to discuss and debate the top stories in politics. It's our Week in Review tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.